Lord Nrisimha Dev, but also today is the disappearance day of one of Srila Prabhupada's dearmost disciples named Jayananda Prabhu, who's now known as Jayananda Thakur. So we'll also speak about him, and what I will try to do is kind of interrelate the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj with the qualities of Jayananda Prabhu. But before I begin, there's probably many of you who may not know who Jayananda Prabhu is and why we would celebrate his disappearance day. Because in modern day ISKCON, disappearance days are celebrated for gurus who have disciples, and it is celebrated by the disciples and some of the friends of the guru or the admirers of the guru. But Jayananda's appearance day is celebrated worldwide around ISKCON for everybody. So why is that? Jayananda Prabhu was the first devotee in ISKCON to establish Rath Yatra, I mean, amongst other things. But this is what he's most known for. So I'll give you some geography. America, it has east and west. East is New York, west California. You have California, northern and southern. Northern California, San Francisco. So New York is on the East Coast, which was the first temple. And then if you go about 3,000 or so miles across the country, west and slightly south, you come to San Francisco. And that is the second temple, which was established in 1967. And that's the year Jayananda Prabhu joined. And as some of you know the story, Lord Jagannath was found in an import store. Just a little Lord Jagannath like that. Some devotee found it, and because anything from India was attractive and thought to be spiritual, the devotee got one. We won't say how she got it, but she got it. And she brought it to Prabhupada and said, "Is this anything special?" And Prabhupada paid his obeisances. And he said, "Oh, Lord Jagannath has come." So he asked, were there other deities? And she said, yes. So she went back and got the other deities. And then Prabhupada took this as an indication that Lord Jagannath wanted to be worshipped. So he asked, "Is there anyone who could carve Lord Jagannath?" And so happened that the husband of the devotee who got Lord Jagannath was able to do that. So they carved Lord Jagannath. So the first Lord Jagannath deities in ISKCON were in San Francisco, and then the first Rath Yatra. And Jayananda Prabhu was responsible for establishing that Rath Yatra. And as far as I know, then the next Rath Yatra was New York, and he in 1976, and he was responsible for that. Or maybe earlier, I'm not sure. And then after that, Los Angeles, 1977, and he was responsible for establishing that. So, aside from his establishing of Rath Yatra, he had qualities which would transform people that would come in his association. He was not an ordinary person and not an ordinary devotee. And because of this purity, Prabhupada noted that he was a pure devotee. Because in a letter after he died, Prabhupada said that if you're not yet pure when you die because of your devotional service, you'll go to the higher planets. And then you'll come back and you'll take birth. And he said, but Jayananda, I'm certain because of his purity, he went back to Godhead. So Prabhupada said, I was very proud to have such a devotee as Jayananda, such a pure devotee. So in the Catholic religion, people are, I don't know how it works, maybe Gita Nagari knows. When someone becomes a saint, is it there? Are they voted in as saints or at a certain period?
Some indications are verified by that legal
So if they show miracles, then it's brought to the it's brought to the Vatican. If they approve, then at least it would be up for approval at that point.
Yeah.
A vote would be taken. Was it a real miracle? Was it? Did he do enough miracles? Was it big enough? Yeah. Yeah. He ate 436 gulab jamuns in one sitting. That's a miracle, yeah. So Jayananda, because of this, he's... Everyone who met him, even in the early days, considered him a saint. It wasn't even that you needed a vote. It was just when you're in his association. He said, oh, this person is special. But he was given that certification by Prabhupada as a pure devotee, and therefore he's not considered the first saint or the first person officially designated, perhaps, because he left in 1977, before Prabhupada left. Anyway, we'll get back. I just wanted to give some history, Jayananda, a little bit of who he was, and we'll talk more about him. But he had come to ISKCON in 1967, given everything to Prabhupada, given his life, and transformed by his association the lives of many, many people. So what I hope to accomplish today is that we also become inspired by his qualities, by what he stood for as a person, what he showed to us by his actions. We can become inspired and motivated and purified by that. That's my objective. But let's talk a little bit about Prahlad Maharaj. And let's see if we can relate that to Jayananda Prabhu. Yes? Yeah, that's true. We have so many saints in the Bhagavatam. One of the things that we notice about Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada pointed this out in the lecture, is that Prahlad Maharaj was not making an effort to defend himself. And not only was he not making an effort to defend himself from his father, he was challenging his father. And it's kind of interesting if you just understand the context. When Hiranyaksha was killed by the boar incarnation of Vishnu, Hiranyakashipu became an arch enemy of Vishnu. And in his kingdom, Vishnu was outlawed from his kingdom. Nobody could worship Vishnu, and nobody could even say the name of Vishnu. If you said Vishnu, you'd be arrested or killed. So he had issues with Vishnu, you could say. He needed therapy, seriously. Had serious issues with Vishnu. I mean, what Vishnu did wasn't that bad. After all, Hiranyaksha, his brother, whacked the earth down into the Garbhodak ocean. That wasn't a nice thing to do. So the boar incarnation simply brought the earth back in orbit, which wasn't such a bad thing. And then Hiranyaksha wasn't happy about that, so they had a fight. So, you know, Kshatriyas, they fight. Somebody gets killed. Anyway, we may remember when Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad one day, as parents do, "What did you learn in school today?" Parents are interested. And Hiranyakashipu was quite interested because Prahlad was heir to the throne. And so, as we know, Hiranyakashipu was a full-fledged demon through and through, up and down, and all around. He was atheist of atheists. So he was very excited that his son would follow suit of his atheism and demoniac nature, and therefore he was being trained by the sons of Sukracharya to inherit the throne and develop all the qualities necessary of a bona fide demon. bona fide asura. So when these asuras are called asuras, they take it as a compliment. Right? Then they'll take it as a, you calling me, what are you calling me? You calling me a demon? No, that's a compliment. You asura, no, that's a compliment. You are against God. But Prahlad, although he called his father the best of demons, that was kind of a compliment. But because Hiranyakashipu's greatest enemy was Vishnu, when Hiranyakashipu, who was the most powerful person, just understand the context, he was the most powerful person that ever existed in the universe. He was so powerful that demigods had to retreat and hide. They were hiding here. You know? What's the name of the place? Nisringapali? The demigods were hiding here because Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the universe. So even powerful demigods were afraid of him. So just get a glimpse of his power. Everybody was afraid of him. Even Brahma, Narada Muni, all these powerful personalities were afraid of him. At least they were, seemed, at least, either were pretending or actually afraid. At least the way we understand it, everybody was afraid. So now Prahlad Maharaj comes. His father is the arch enemy of Vishnu. He bans worship of Vishnu. He orders all sacrifices of Vishnu to be stopped. If you say the name of Vishnu, if you worship Vishnu, you'll be arrested. And he asked his son, what is the best thing you learned? And he said, the best thing I learned is hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, surrendering, worshiping. Who? Vishnu. Now, you might think that's an unsafe thing to say to your father because he's training you to be an enemy of Vishnu. He's an enemy of Vishnu. He's outlawed Vishnu. He's ordered anyone to be arrested or killed who says the name of Vishnu. And Prahlad just says it like it is. This is the only good thing I've ever learned, is to worship Vishnu. So from that we can see Prahlad was quite fearless. And that was what agitated Hiranyakashipu, right? To kill Prahlad. Says, because there's an enemy in my house. My son has become an enemy. So he told Prahlad, you've become my enemy because you are on the side of Vishnu. So he ordered him to be killed. Now, as we know from the story, now you could think, okay, Prahlad Maharaj is calculating. My father's the biggest demon in the universe. He's outlawed the worship of Vishnu. I'm a devotee of Vishnu. Maybe I should do some mystic cities, so if he tries to kill me, then I could just become invisible and they wouldn't be able to find me. Or maybe on the side I should take a martial arts class. That way when the demons come with their spears and they're trying to put me in boiling oil and throw me off a mountain, and I can just annihilate them. He didn't think that way. We might think that way. Okay, this is a precarious situation. We start calculating, how will I be able to protect myself? So Prabhupada points out that wasn't his mood. His mood was Rakshishate Vishvaso Guptite Varanam Yata, that Krishna will protect me and Krishna will maintain me. These are two of the six symptoms of a surrendered devotee. That was his thinking, that okay, I'm in this situation, it's divine arrangement. If Krishna wants to save me, he will. He wasn't even thinking Krishna will save me, he's thinking if Krishna wants to save me, because the thinking of a devotee is, okay, Krishna's protecting me, he's my maintainer and protector. Okay, so therefore whatever happens, that's the way Krishna maintains and protects. So he was in that consciousness. How Krishna wants to deal with me, that's how he'll deal with me. So then Prabhupada said, why was Prahlad put in these difficulties? Just to glorify just to glorify devotional service, to glorify Prahlad and glorify the protection of Krishna. That's why. So Prahlad was in the perfect consciousness to be protected, because who does Krishna protect? Those who have absolute faith in his protection. Yes? That's the person Krishna protects. So in other words, Prahlad Maharaj was not making any arrangement for his own protection. He's simply allowing Krishna, that's all. Krishna will do it. And this is what he was teaching, and this is what he's teaching us. There's another thing that he's teaching us, and it's quite interesting. I don't know if you've picked up on it or thought about it. But within the heart of Prahlad Maharaj, there was absolutely no vengeance whatsoever. When his father was killed, and then so many other demons attacked, and Lord Nrsimhadev killed them. As we know, Lord Nrsimhadev said, "You want a benediction? What benediction do you want?" He said, "Well, for myself, I'm fine. But can you liberate my father?" And he didn't ask that, you know, these demons that tried to stab me, throw me off a cliff, have elephants trample me, put me in boiling oil, and they did a lot of other things that are not described in Bhagavatam. Could you, like, arrange for them to be killed in the way they killed me? He didn't say that, did he? There's no verse where he said that. Isn't that interesting? There was absolutely no vengeance whatsoever in his heart. He didn't go to the child protection agency and say, "Okay, we have some serious child abuse issues here, and we have to look at them." This one devotee, she wrote me today and said, "My stepdaughter, she upsets me. I feel like slapping her in the face." I said, "Oh, in America, if you slap your child in the face, your child can sue you. They could put you in jail." So you see, in the heart of Prahlad Maharaj, there was no vengeance towards anyone. Now, some people, even devotees, if they went through what Prahlad Maharaj went through, they may lose faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. Yes? I just try to become a devotee, and the result of that is I'm being put in boiling oil. Is there actually a God? What's going on with this process? It's true. Many of us, if we were put in those situations, our faith would be tested. Why is Krishna doing this? What did I do? I just tried to become a devotee. Now look what's happening. We don't see Prahlad reacting that way at all. But actually we see the opposite. His faith is increasing. Yes? So what was he doing as they were killing, trying to kill him? He was just meditating on Krishna with Rakshishate Vishwaso, with firm faith that Krishna wants, he'll protect me. And because his faith was so deep, that's what Krishna did. Which teaches us something about the power of faith. Faith is mystical. Faith is like, it's like they have this movie, The Law of Attraction. You could have another one called The Law of Attraction of Faith, because by your faith, it attracts Krishna to take care of you. Like so, Prahlad Maharaj is thrown off a mountain, and at the bottom of the mountain, Mother Bhumi is there, and she catches him. So, absolute faith, absolutely no vengeance in his heart. but only in his heart, compassion. I mean, he went through quite a traumatic experience, didn't he? I mean, imagine somebody going through that. But because of his faith, it wasn't traumatic. And we know in Bhagavatam, the verses he's chanting, he's saying, "My Lord, my mind, magna citta, my citta, it's absorbed in you, so I'm happy. But I have this problem that all these other people aren't happy. I don't want to go back to Godhead alone. That's going to be a problem for me." So after everything he's gone through, what is he thinking about? He's thinking about how others can be delivered. That's all. That's all he's thinking about. So he's such a good example for us. He accepts everything as Krishna's mercy. And when you accept everything as Krishna's mercy, then you have no vengeance towards anything that anybody does towards you, because you accept it as ultimately a divine arrangement. And that's how he accepted it. And that's why he wasn't upset. And it didn't shake his meditation. His whole meditation was just on how to help other people. We see he's preaching in school. He's 5 years old and he's already in that consciousness of how we can save others. Right from the very beginning, he was in that consciousness. It never changed. Through all the trauma he went through, it never changed. The trauma is over. He says, "My dear Lord and Shringadev, please deliver my father." After everything his father did. And then he say, "My dear Lord and Shringadev, really, you know, if you ask me what do I want, I just don't want to go back to Godhead alone. Can you take these other people?" That's Prahlad Maharaj. That's who he is. That's such an example for us. Like, we go out to preach Krishna consciousness. Not everybody appreciates it. When we were younger devotees, there was a lot of antagonism towards our movement. Sometimes it became very strong. And so Prahlad Maharaj was like our hero. Because we were going out, we were getting arrested all the time, getting arrested, ending up in jail. So the devotees in some airports were actually occasionally were being physically harassed and beaten and then arrested, being accused of attacking another person. So it was a very similar situation. So Prahlad Maharaj was our great hero in going through difficulties, taking chances. Because we learn from Prabhupada that our meditation is not about us, but about how we can save others. So now let's go to Jayananda and see if we can kind of bring it in. Okay, we have to do some geography class now. Jayananda is... he came to California, so we have east and west, or... yeah, that's west and that's east. Right is east. So he comes from New York to California, and with the intention of doing Ratha Yatra in California. He had leukemia. It became known that he had leukemia. There's a picture of Jayananda wearing a kind of an orange jacket, and I think that jacket is there in his samadhi, in his memorial. And it shows him at Ratha Yatra like that. He had leukemia at that point. The devotees described that they would see him limping. And he would say, "Don't tell me." He would reveal to a few devotees that actually I have leukemia. My body's falling apart, but don't tell anybody. Because he didn't want anyone to sympathize with him. And he didn't want anybody to take care of him. And he's out there at Ratha Yatra like that, completely transcending it. So anyway, he comes to California. So he's in Los Angeles. So you have Northern California, Southern California. So Southern California, the head, the central part of... the main part of Southern California is Los Angeles, and if you go down about 130 miles from Los Angeles, you come to the Mexican border. And there's a temple about 10 miles from that border, 15 miles in San Diego. Now, little history on the AMA, American Medical Association. If you have a cure for cancer, it's illegal, and you will be arrested in America. The only thing you can do to treat cancer is give people chemotherapy, radiation, or operation. Those are only three modalities you can use to cure cancer. If you use any other technique, whether or not it cures cancer, you will be shut down, you will be arrested. And there are case after case after case in America of people who were curing cancer whose clinics were closed. And drug companies, first before they closed them, offered to buy them for millions of dollars, and all the people refused. So, Jayananda had leukemia. So what happens is, the people who have these cures, they go to Mexico. You'll find cancer clinics in Mexico because you can't treat them in America. And Mexico, San Diego, and you go drive 15 miles from San Diego, you're in Mexico, and that's where the clinic was. And I was a devotee in San Diego, so we would hear about the activities of Jayananda. So Jayananda went to this clinic to try to cure himself of leukemia. This is what we heard. He was rising, he's got leukemia. I don't know if you know how serious that is, but he's dying of leukemia, trying to cure it. And we heard that every day in the hospital, actually he had two rooms, and one room was his where he lived, and one room was a temple room. And every day he got up at 3 a.m. and did the full morning program with leukemia, dying of leukemia. Is that amazing? Oh, Prabhu, you know, I work so hard, and I just can't get up in the morning. You know, I know I should, but, you know, I'm just burned out when I come home. And yeah, so you have your good excuses, but leukemia is a better excuse, isn't it? So, as I said, I wanted to try to make this class inspirational. So this was a great inspiration for me, has always been a great inspiration for me. Why did he get up every morning? Well, let's go back a little bit. Little geography. Go back to Northern California. We're in San Francisco. This is where Jayananda first joined, and we stayed there for many, many years. Across from San Francisco, there's a bay, and on the other side of the bay, there's a town called Berkeley, also known as Berserkly, because it's a very crazy place. And it's a college town, a huge college town, considered the best public college or one of the best in America. And I went to school there. So we would sometimes go into San Francisco, join them, have Harinam. So I would get Jayananda's association. We would have festivals in Berkeley. He would come, always the one to organize the festivals. But eventually, I was posted in San Francisco in the summer of 1970, and I could observe Jayananda's activities, both in preparing Rath Yatra and in general. And his activity was, he went to bed at 11 o'clock every night, and he woke up at 3 o'clock. That was his schedule. Now, I have to tell you, the Brahmacharis went to bed at 11 and got up at 4, so 5 hours was all we really got in that temple. But still, he got up at 3. So that was his habit. So all of us, if you have an excuse for not getting up early, then maybe we could think of Jayananda Prabhu. Getting up with leukemia in the Tijuana hospital at 3 o'clock to do the full morning program. For all of those of us who find it difficult to do full morning programs and whatever, we can think of him and take inspiration. Now, another even more significant point, which relates to the point I'm making about Prahlad Maharaj's heart. In the Tijuana hospital, we heard that he would go around the hospital preaching to people. Because Jayananda's heart was very much like Prahlad Maharaj's heart. And he was seems always thinking about other people. And so we could say he could not help himself from sharing Krishna consciousness, even though he was ill. So he would get up and he would go around. And he was holding Bhagavad Gita classes in the Tijuana hospital. But here's the most amazing thing about the classes. This is incredible. This is like, just this shows you the heart of where Jayananda was at. He's taking the cure and it's kind of getting better, but it's slow and it's expensive. And Jayananda doesn't like to waste time and doesn't like to spend Krishna's money. So here now he's wasting time, what he sees as wasting time, and he's spending money. But, you know, the cure is kind of working. So we have to reverse a little bit about how he doesn't like spending money. Jayananda had a pair of what we call thongs. What's the equivalent of thongs? Cost in America $1. Even to this day, they probably cost $1. Thongs are like the simplest shoe, sandal you could wear. It's a little thin piece of rubber, right? What do you call thongs? You have another name in India? Flip-flops. The cheapest flip-flops, right? So Jayananda has flip-flops, two different colors, because I guess lost one or something, and he's got one of them's like worn out of the bottom, almost worn through, right? And he's got a pair of pants that he's been wearing forever, and they have two big holes in it. So the temple president says, look at, you can't wear these pants. They're, what do people think of you? These old pants. And he was always working, so he, you know, just like work pants, so they have holes in it. So he gives some money to one of the devotees, says, here, go buy some pants. So he's like, I don't want to do this. It's about a waste of Krishna's money. So the devotee says, you can't wear these pants. What Jayananda tried to do is he found some old other pants that were the wrong size, so he cut them off as cutoffs, and he wore them over his other pants to cover the holes. And he said, okay, this is good enough. We don't have to buy pants, because now you can't see the holes. So he had these old pants with cutoffs over them, and he was like, look, this way we don't have to spend money. So you understand he didn't want to spend money. Yeah, let's go back a little bit so we really get the picture. When he was a young devotee, his grandfather died and gave him an inheritance of $5,000, which in those days probably was equivalent to $40,000 or $50,000. And he gave all the money to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, are you sure you want to give all this money? You should keep it because you'll need it. And he said, Prabhupada, I wouldn't know what to do with this money. I want to give it to you. And Prabhupada used that money and he printed the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada said, the first in book distribution was Jayananda. Prabhupada said, who is the first in book distribution? And they said, oh, it was this one or that one. He said, no, it is Jayananda, because he gave the money to print the book. And on a morning walk, Prabhupada called Jayananda, and Jayananda was in the back, because he would always stay in the back. And he said, call Jayananda up. He said, Jayananda, you were first. He said, first in what, Prabhupada? He said, book distribution, because you gave the money. And Jayananda said, well, whatever you say, Prabhupada. It was extremely humble. Anyway, so he gave all his money. He gets some old pants, cuts them off, puts them over his other pants so he doesn't have to spend money. The temple president says, no, you have to get pants. So they go in the store, right? So they find the least expensive pants. And the devotee with him and said, at least get a new pair of thongs, which in those days cost about 80 cents. So he said, okay, I'll get the thongs. I can tolerate the 80 cents, but I can't tolerate paying for the pants. So they're sitting in line to pay the pants. And he said to the other devotee, he said, I can't tolerate the money that we're spending on these pants. We could use it to distribute books, to distribute prasadam. I can't tolerate it. So he went and put the pants on. He said, pay for the thongs. I can tolerate that. He went and put the pants on. He said, I'm going to walk out of the store. And he got caught walking out of the store, stealing the pants. And immediately said, the police caught him. And he said, yes, I stole the pants. Immediately admitted. And he said, I'm a monk. I'm a missionary. I could not tolerate spending the money on these pants. And these policemen are like, oh my God, this is a real saint. So they brought him to the judge. And he told the story again. And the judge said, the only fine I can give this man is the $10 to pay the pants. And one of the policemen gave $5. So they only had to give. They were so overwhelmed by his devotion and dedication. So now we go back to the hospital. So he's in the hospital. And they stopped him from giving Bhagavad Gita class. Stopped it. Said, you can no longer do this. You can no longer preach. It's not allowed. It just curbed his preaching. At that point, he said, get me out of here. I don't want to stay here. If I cannot preach, I don't want to stay here. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada and he said, the cure is going slow. We're spending a lot of money. I can't preach here. I'd rather just leave and die. What's the use of maintaining my body if I can't preach? And I'm just wasting money. And Prabhupada said, yes. What is the use of maintaining the body? Now, I don't know exactly what he told Prabhupada. I don't know if he said, well, if I stay in longer and spend X amount of money, I could cure myself. But it was not his mood. He didn't want to live if he couldn't preach. And that's why he left the hospital. Not that he couldn't afford it. Not that it wasn't working, but it was working slowly. And he was just idle, spending Krishna's money, and he couldn't tolerate it. So then he came back to the San Diego temple, and he stayed there. So I was giving class one day. He didn't like to give class. He didn't feel qualified to give class. He had joined in 1967. He was at least 10 years older than everybody. So by age, by seniority as a devotee, he was one of the oldest devotees in the movement. And he didn't like to give class because he didn't feel qualified to give class. Now listen to this. In New York, there was a lot going on in the temple and a lot of devotees were not so fully engaged in service. And as we know, within a big religious organization, sometimes you get people, which Prabhupada had labeled himself in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as lazies and crazies, or what we might commonly call as people who are spaced out, who are not fully engaged in devotional service, maybe taking advantage of the temple, kind of lazy, do a few hours of service, sleep, don't even do the service well. So, Jayananda, his position was, he just served and served and served and served and served all day. As I said, I'm in the San Francisco temple in 1970. We're getting ready, all of us were getting ready for Rath Yatra. So I observed his schedule. He would come back about 10 o'clock at night after working all day. And he had not chanted his rounds because he had been working since about 4 or 5 in the morning. He just got up and he started working. And then he would come back at night when the day was over and he would chant his rounds and then he would go to sleep and then he would get up about 4 o'clock and then he would go out and start working. So this gives you an idea of how he worked. And one time they were having a darshan in San Francisco and Prabhupada invited him in and he came in and he fell asleep and they tried to wake him up and Prabhupada said, don't wake him up. He's working hard. He's working like 10 men. He's working harder than all of you. Let him sleep. So He just worked and worked and worked. That was his program. And he did the most menial tasks. This was his mood. He was famous for taking out the trash. And not only that, sometimes he would be up to his waist in trash. And he would wear a pin on his nose because it smelled. And that gives you an idea of Jayananda. Up to here in trash with a pin on his nose, and he'd have to have the pin on his nose all the way to the dump because it smelled so bad. Now, if you are the senior devotee, probably you might think, maybe we'll get the bhaktas to do this. After all, I'm a senior devotee. He didn't think that way. He was also the temple driver. He liked that position because that way he could serve everybody. He would drive us out on Sankirtan every day. He would drive us back. And in those days the program was all day Harinam Sankirtan. And around the Sankirtan party was book distribution, which was just BTG. And nobody wanted to do book distribution. So we'd each get like a half hour. We'd go out from the Sankirtan party and we would distribute magazines for a half hour. That was considered like punishment. Oh, now it's my turn. You know, nobody would take a magazine, you know, try to give out a magazine. You distribute 10, 20 magazines a whole day, you know, in 6 hours. That's the whole temple. So yeah, maybe you could distribute one in an hour. Nobody liked to do it. Jayananda, that's all he did. He just, the whole time, he just distributed magazines. Then another one of his services was car repair. So car repair meant you're on the ground. So he was always on the ground underneath the cars. So that was kind of a place you would find him. And it said that many, many of the people that joined the San Francisco temple were preached to by Jayananda while he was under the car, repairing the car. That's how they got their preaching. That's what he did. So anyway, this gives you an idea of how hard he would work. And he was responsible for putting together all the Rath Yatra festivals with whatever crew he had, whoever the temple would give him. And often, he didn't get enough people. And so he'd just find some drunk on the street and go, here, you know, you want something to eat? And give him prasadam and then, hey, can you help us do this? He'd just pick people off the street, whoever he could get, because he didn't have enough people and he didn't complain. So this is Jayananda, just the servant of everyone. So this sannyasi is giving this class. We have so many spaced out devotees in this temple. You can no longer live in this temple if you're not focused on your service, if you're not fully engaged. Very heavy class. In those days, we tended to be quite fanatical. And so we could imagine this was a very fanatical class given by a very fanatical sannyasi about all the spaced out devotees. So, to give you a glimpse of the heart of Jayananda, after he hears the class, he turns to the devotees and he said, I can't believe how spaced out I am. I am the most spaced out devotee of all. Now, normally you'd hear a class like that and you'd think, who does this sannyasi think he is? Right? That's how most... This is a horrible class. Fanatical. Heavy. Unloving. Unreasonable. But how does Jayananda Prabhu take it? He takes it as, he's preaching to me. I'm the most spaced out devotee. Amazing. So I'm giving class in San Diego and Jayananda Prabhu is embarrassing me by sitting in the audience. After the class, he's asking questions. Could you explain this? Could you explain that? He had absolutely no false ego whatsoever. Zero. Zero, zero, zero. Not point, 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 oh, one, one. Nothing. New bhaktas would be in the temple and he would be doing something and he would ask them, do you think this is the right way to do it? Do you have any suggestions how we should do it? You think it's okay what I'm doing? As we know, in an organization, many things go wrong. So when there was criticism, he would never respond to it. The way he would respond is simply he'd say, you know, they would be criticizing, and he would say, we have so much service to do. Let's just do our service. Get absorbed in our service. That was his consciousness. Just service. We just have service. He never got into controversy, criticism, politics. He was always just focused. Service. So it's very interesting. Any devotee, you'll ask any devotee that had Jayananda Prabhu's association and say, Prabhu, did you ever hear Jayananda say anything negative about anyone or any situation in ISKCON? And everyone will say, no, 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 never. Is that amazing? His only focus was service, and he would overlook the faults of all the devotees and only encourage them and only make them feel that they were better than he. Now, many of my godbrothers will testify. Let me go back a little bit. Some of my godbrothers were what we call in America rough around the edges. You get the idea, rough around the edges? Uncultured. Or how should we say? Very uncultured. Americans by nature are uncultured. So now, if you're talking about American who's very uncultured, you get the idea of rough around the edges. And I had some godbrothers I personally know who were very rough around the edges and very like kind of Hell's Angel type people, you know, heavy, heavy types, you know, who you wouldn't want to rub the wrong way because it wouldn't be nice the way they responded. And these people became devotees because of Jayananda, because he was such a saint, because he was so, how should we say, because he was such a saint, he would melt their hearts and they would just become like little, these big rough tough guys would just become like little kids and babies and just transform in his presence. And not only did he transform devotees, but he transformed non-devotees. People would fall in love with him because his heart was, he was just full of kindness. He just always thought about how to help and serve other people. Just like sometimes we go out and there's a situation and we think, oh, I should have brought prasadam. I didn't bring any prasadam. We could have given prasadam to people. He was the opposite. When he would go out, he'd go out with pies and cakes and cookies and bring prasadam for people. And he would melt people's hearts. So he was the kind of person that when you meet, even you're a non-devotee, you will never ever forget that person in your life. It's just like, because his presence was so rare. It's just you don't meet people like him who have such genuine kindness and extreme humility without any trace of ego. So there's a famous story many of you may have heard, where in order to do Rath Yatra every year, they had to get permits. And so there's this one black woman who's just really tough, and she just was really hard on the devotees. She didn't make it easy for the devotees to get permits. She was just hard, hard, hard. But he would always bring her pies and cakes and cookies. And then one year, a group of devotees came to get the permits, and he wasn't there. And so she was wondering what happened to him, Jim. So this big, rough, tough, black woman, heavy, said, so where's Jim? And they said, no, he's passed away. And right on the spot, this rough, tough woman, just broke down completely, just collapsed. So that's the effect that he had on people. That judges wouldn't put him in jail for stealing, policemen would give him money to pay his fine. People would break down upon seeing him. These rough, tough people would become devotees by his association. And he could get people right off the street to engage in devotional service by helping Rathayatra. And they would work all day from morning till night. And he would just find these people. And they would go out, and Rathayatra and Jayananda would do incredible austerities. The one devotee said, they were working in this area by the railroad tracks, and sometimes they would sleep on the railroad tracks. Or they would sleep in the van, where he'd put a piece of wood in the van and use the driver's seat as a pillow. And just do these amazing austerities. But everybody would do them with Jayananda, because just to be with him, they would be so inspired. And they just felt protected, that if I'm just with Jayananda or just engaged in devotional service, then it's just wonderful. So everyone did all these amazing austerities in building these Rathayatra cars, working all day up till the evening, doing all these austerities, sleeping on the cart. I mean, often they never came back to the temple, they just stayed on the site and slept on the cart. Anyway, there's so much to say, but we could stop here and see if there's anyone has any questions or anyone would like to relate something about Jayananda Prabhu. Yes? We have a... Is there a microphone up there? Microphone? Oh, he has a microphone. Is there a light on in the phone? Light's on, but then... I'll repeat what you said.
You said that if the person has full faith...
If the person has full faith...
In Krishna's protection...
And Krishna will protect them. Some, if you have some faith but not complete faith, then will Krishna will protect you. I will speak from my realization. Okay, I'll tell a story. It's a nice story. I don't know if I've told the story before. We got, before the days of email, we would get these letters when Prabhupada was in India in 1970, and the letters would be sent to the temple. And it was just one-liners from Prabhupada, so that way we can keep up on what Prabhupada was doing. Now you have, you know, websites for your spiritual master, you have lectures, you have quotes and so forth. So this was like the precursor. It was a letter would go around, he said this and that. And one of the things that Prabhupada said was, anyone who will go anywhere to preach Krishna consciousness, not considering where they'll live, how they'll eat, I will take the dust of their feet and I'll put it on my head. So when we heard that, we went ballistic. We said, oh my God, we have to go preach. This was like 1970. And in 1970, preaching only went on in places where there were temples. Outside the temples, nobody went anywhere. So we said, okay, this was Canadian winter. We said, we're going to go out in the middle of the Canadian winter, and we're only going to put enough petrol in the van to get us to the next town, and we're not going to take any money with us, so we will have nothing when we get to the next town. We will have nothing to eat, and we'll have no place to sleep, because we wanted to get the mercy. This gives you an idea what ISKCON was like in 1970, with temple presidents being 20 years old. I happen to be the crazy temple president who was in charge of that crazy Sankirtan party. So now you know what Janava has to put up with living with me. So And at this time, big book distribution had not begun. It had only started with a few big books being distributed in our temple in Vancouver, and maybe a few isolated big books distributed here and there, but nobody had actually gone out and done it. So this party was the first party that was actually going to try to do it in mass, distribute big books. So we drive off, and at 8 o'clock in the evening, we arrive in this town in the middle of the winter in Canada, which is very cold. And in those days, we didn't know anything other than wherever you go, you get out of your van and you do Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. That's what you do. You just go on the street and do kirtan. So that's what we did on a deserted street in a Canadian winter. It was too cold, a little town. I think it was called Kamloops. If anyone's from Canada, you want to go look up on the Google Kamloops. How many people lived in Kamloops in 1970? It was just this little town. It was like on the way to Edmonton, on the way to Calgary, which is a bigger town. So we get out there, and there's nobody out there. So there we are in the middle of Canadian winter, no money. All we have are some books. And all of a sudden, one drunk comes along. The only guy in the street is a drunk, because he has enough alcohol in him to make him warm enough to stay in the street and drunk enough to not be able to find his home. So we're out there, and the drunk's there, you know, moving and grooving with the kirtan, you know, as the drunks do. And the one devotee goes up and gives him a Krishna book, and we're all thinking, why are you giving this guy a Krishna book? He's not going to buy a Krishna book. He's drunk. He doesn't have any money. Pretty soon, $8, which in those days was like equivalent of like $40. Drunk gives him $8. And we're like, oh my God. Anyway, there's no one on the street. It's 9 o'clock. Now we at least have $8, and we had to find a place to stay. So then we drive around, and we find this hostel. You know, a place. So we knock on the door, knock, knock, knock. You know. Come in, come in. There's nobody there. We had the whole hostel to ourselves, all, you know, it was like 40 beds, and, you know, so, yeah, what room do you want, you know? Bathroom, showers the next day. What do you want for breakfast? They said, we had apples, bananas, you know, whatever we asked for, yogurt, you know, they gave us everything. Then we went out door to door, knock, knock, knock. We met a devotee's aunt, and we said, you know, we don't have anything, we don't have any money, and we need some pots to cook. She goes, here. So she gives us all her pots. And then we knock on a few doors and say, we don't have any rice, we don't have any weed. Could you get? So everything we needed, the pots, the cooking, you know, we got it. We drove off to the next city. What do? We get there the next morning. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Where are we going to stay? We spend our money on gas, petrol. Where are we going to stay? We meet some hippies and say, we need a place to stay. They say, no problem. We have a store, a head shop. You can stay in the back. So you imagine, you know, here's the keys to our store. We close it at 6 o'clock, so we'll give you the keys. You can come anytime you want. They give us the keys to their store, right? Could have robbed the whole store. So there we are. We're living in their store in the back, right? And we go out. All of a sudden, you know, big, big thing, you know, on television, this, that. All of a sudden, somebody gives us their home. Come to our home. You can stay here. We're doing Sunday feast. Everything's happening. Devotees joining. So that's my personal realization. When you, I don't know if you want to drive off in the middle of winter in Canada and test it, but we tested it and it worked. So my realization is the more you put yourself like this for Krishna, the more Krishna says, oh, my devotee needs help. So I'll help you. Now, I don't mean we should become mindless and don't act intelligently, but as we know the story, some man wanted to open a temple in Delhi, so Prabhupada was traveling through Delhi, and he told his disciples, okay, four disciples, get off, open a temple in Delhi. So Prabhupada seemed to think if you do these things in spreading Krishna consciousness, Krishna will somehow or other take care of you. So I think we have to say that faith is a mystical principle which you attract by your own helplessness. Prabhupada put me in charge of a temple. I was 20 years old, straight out of 2 years of college, a bona fide college dropout with no experience in management. And I said, Prabhupada, how do I do this? He said, put your hands up in the air, pray to Krishna and say, Krishna, I can't do this, I have no ability, please give me the intelligence. That year, 15 people joined. So it works. At least it works for me. It worked for me, yeah. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jayananda Thakur ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Gopi Manandi.